everybody, what's going on? This is Philip Sace, and you are listening to Guitar Radio Show.
Davin.
All right, folks, welcome back to Guitar Radio Show. I have seen our next guest perform live on numerous occasions, and I'm always amazed at the end of the show that he isn't just reduced into a pile of dust. He leaves everything, and I mean everything, up on the stage. And albeit I'm sure he's trying to just deliver the goods to the crowd, I still get the impression that, and it's really more like an intense sense that he is swept away by the music and the symbiotic relationship with his instrument, and the melding of those energies coupled with an incredibly strong intention of pushing out this energy into the universe. It's really quite astounding, and I often watch audiences walk away. I love to watch their faces when they walk away from one of his shows, just shaking their heads as to what they just saw. And it is beautiful. His latest record captures that same energy, and we're going to talk about that and more. Please welcome to Guitar Radio Show, Mr. Philip Sace. How are you, sir?
Oh my goodness! What a beautiful, beautiful introduction. That I'm blushing over here. Thank you, Mark. It's a real pleasure to share this time and this space with you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful. You know, it's so true too. When I watch you play, and I've seen you play so many times. I've always said to myself, I want to ask him, you know, do you almost forget that people are there, that you're so swept away? Because I feel that you are more heart than head when it comes to when you get wrapped up in this.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, I think anytime you're in love with something that you're doing, and if, you know, you can get into that moment and get out of, I'll just speak for myself. I don't speak for anyone else, but certainly for me, if I can get out of my head and really into my heart and just kind of quiet all of the, you know, let's call it the loop, you know, the things that go around in your head sometimes that distract you or maybe get in your way and stop you from getting things done. If I can just stay in the moment of that, of the opportunity, the blessing, the privilege mm-hmm. of making music and feeling that love in that moment and the intention and, you know, whatever the feeling that is that I'm sort of in at that moment, whether it's something really happy or excited or angry or jealous or whatever the experience is that, you know, I'm trying to certainly to touch that. And, you know, and thank God that the music is an outlet for it. It's therapeutic. It's truly honest. And it's truly, you know, where I'm at at that moment. So that's really what I'm striving for, is to get to that place. You know, let it out, learn from it. And also, if it touches somebody that's out of performance and, you know, whatever it is, I can't control it, but if it excites someone and they share that energy back with me, that is incredible. You know, that energy exchange, it's giving and receiving. Mm-hmm. It's not just all like, you know, I think that's really the intention in the moment. So yeah, thank you for raising that, Mark.
Yeah, it's a beautiful feedback loop. I really, you know, I get swept away. I see you getting swept away. I look around me, and everybody else is getting swept away by the tones, by those, but, you know, and I think volume definitely has something to do with that. You know, I think it creates this reverberation that passes the blood-brain barrier, if you will, and really just reaches deep inside. You know, some people argue if there's a soul. I'm absolutely positive there is a soul when I hear music like what you do.
Oh man, thank you so much. That's very deep, and I've got some goosebumps, so thank you. And I think, you know, it's really trying to just strive to, you know, to try to get deeper each time. You know, mm-hmm. I'm approaching it as a student. I'm approaching it as somebody who's learning each and every day. So I want to approach a performance, a moment from that place, as open to receiving and learning ultimately in the moment. And I mean, what a beautiful opportunity if you can connect with someone energetically and exchange a moment like that. I mean, that's a special privilege, which I'm thankful for.
Yeah, that's the beauty of this instrument that we play also, is that you're forever peeling the onion.
That's for sure.
I love that. When I learn something new after all these years, not only do you have that sense of pride, that sense of accomplishment, but now as you introduce the something new into the rest of your vocabulary, it really makes what you're saying that much clearer to the person listening. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, and Mark, you know, as you and I are chatting, I mean, I'm really gathering that you're a very deep soul and somebody who's really connected to the power of the music. And so I want to sort of flip the question back to you. You know, what for you, if you're performing for people or if you're having that experience, you're connecting with people energetically, where does that take you in a performance?
I mean this in the best possible way. I will dance around and move around like a Krishna. You know,
I completely
lose all sense of, I really do lose sense of my body when that's happening, when you're hitting the four on the floor and it's really, really, you're connecting with the audience, you're connecting with your instrument, all of the gear is doing what it's supposed to do, the instrument is just reverberating against and vibrating against your body because of that level of volume and beautiful tone, then you just do, you completely lose it. And then later on, it's like, you know, you look back on it and you go, well, what happened? That was just 30, it was only 30 seconds. Well, meanwhile, no, it was 45 minutes or an hour and a half, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Do you find that too? Like all of a sudden you blink your eye and you're like, what happened to that show? It's gone. I mean, what we do is hurry up and wait anyway.
That's the life. Hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
But you know what? Sometimes, I mean, that's really also what I'm striving for. I don't want to think about it too much during the gig, right? Like a lot of times, if I was like, how did that one go tonight? Like you don't remember, you know. Yeah. It's sort of like, and that's not always, you know. I mean, you want to be present, which certainly am, but I think sometimes, as you said, if you can get to a place where you almost leave your body a little bit, and it's like, wow, did we really play for 2.5 hours tonight? Holy my, I don't remember. Like, but and it's not a matter of, you know, I never drink on a gig. I've never ever do, you know, nothing. I mean, you got to be sober on the gig 100%,
right?
Because it's serious business.
Absolutely,
it's serious,
and you want to get paid at the end of the night.
Yeah. Oh, just wait. How does that? When does that happen? You get paid. But no, you know what I mean. It's sort of like, it's a special thing. If you can kind of, it's almost like a beautiful meditation that was, you know, an hour long, and you sort of go like, wow, that was an hour. Wow, it felt like it could have been a minute, you know, sort of. So that's really my favorite times, you know, or when, even if you record a show and you listen back to it and you're like, I don't remember any of this. Like, this is really interesting. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's certainly a joy-filled place for sure. More of that, please.
For sure. You know, it's interesting. I've had there's two guitar players that I want to ask you about and get your opinion on their mindset in regards to something. I had Eric Johnson on the show, and we, you know, he's an Austin cat, and you know, whenever we get to see him, it's always a treat. And I was having a chat with him about, There's this great video of him on YouTube of him playing somewhere in the Midwest at a guitar center. And he's doing an in-store because he has a gig later that night. And he's doing an in-store and he's there to talk about his Strat. And all they had for him was a Princeton and one of his Strats, not one of his, but one of the models. And I think there was a delay unit, and that was it. He plugged into it, and he sounded just like him. And he didn't remember this happening. And because I had asked him, I said, do you think you could get up there and go ahead and not bring all the gear that you bring? Because I know you've seen his rig. It's insane, right?
It's special. That's for sure.
It's just insane, and it's and the sounds are completely otherworldly. And I said, do you think you could just go up there with that rig that you had in that guitar center, show up at Antone's one night and blow? And he goes, yeah, but I'd have to have five other guys with me to help me. Five other guitarists to do what I'm doing. And I said, that's when I reminded him of that. And I reminded him of that video and that. And he was like, wow. He goes, really? I go, yeah. And I sent him it. I sent him a copy. And he was just like, He was completely flummoxed. He was like, wow, this is amazing. And then I talked to Eric Gales, who I absolutely love. He's a wonderful guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he said to me, look, just give me a squire and a pig nose and I'll make music.
Right.
So where do you fall in this?
That's a great question. And certainly two guitarists that I really admire, of course, for, they're beautiful, beautiful players.
Yes.
I think the short answer is both are true. I think, when you can have the luxury of traveling with the big rig and you're playing in a place where, maybe people are even setting up your rig for you, they're loading it in and out. And mm-hmm. It's that kind of world. That's fun. You've got your what's there. You know your rig that you've really, so you've got 3, 4, 5, 6 amps, whatever you've got, and you've got them all dialed in. You've got all the tubes. You've got all the time in the world to do this. That's awesome. The reality is that, well, pre-COVID anyway, there's not always that kind of time unless you have a crew of 30 people and you've got, everybody doing all the different people moving it. When you're stripped down, if you're, a crew of 6 dudes in a Sprinter van driving across North America or Europe or whatever you're doing, most of the time it's rental backline. So you pull mm-hmm. into, you're pulling in. It's like, hey, what do you got? You got a twin? Yeah, cool. And most of the time when you're traveling and you don't have the luxury of carrying your 2,000 pounds of rig, it's like, okay, well, what's the loudest, cleanest amp that I can find? Mm-hmm. And it's usually a rental reissue twin. And it's funny you mentioned about Eric Johnson, because when we were at the Dallas guitar show, where are we now? I'm getting so mixed up with this COVID timing. So yeah, it was the year before last.
It was 2019, yeah.
Yeah, and so, that was an example where, we got to the stage, it was time to play. We were on right before Eric Johnson.
I remember, I was there.
So it was, okay, awesome. So I was staring at Eric's rig, right? It was cool. It was like, this is fantastic. I mm-hmm. love it. Very cool. I mean, there wasn't time to look at it. We were just on, and they're like, okay, you wanted a twin? Here it is. And so we plugged in and they're like, okay, you ready to go? And I was like, man, this twin doesn't work. And so it's like, holy shit. And we're ready to go. And so they kind of, and the frustrating thing was that it was like every amp in the world is at this show and they brought up a Silverface Stinker that didn't work. And so I was like, oh shit. So they rolled that off and it was like, I think there was like a Blues DeVille or something, like a 410. Right. And it's like, we got to go. So I just kind of went, cool, plug in and play. Let's go.
Right.
I had brought a small Princeton with me, which was kind of, it wasn't really working right. It was kind of, it needed a cap job. It was not happy at the time. So that, a long way, what I'm saying is that sometimes you don't really have a choice but to play through the shit amp. Mm-hmm. You just got to make it work.
And right.
That was one of the harder times where I had to make that work, was because, there's a lot of heavy players and you want to bring your best, you want to put your best foot forward and all this. And it was like, oh man, this is a kind of a stinker situation, but let's do what we can with it. And, and so it's a long way of saying, yes, I would love to have my own rig that's all tuned and dialed in. I love that. And the reality of traveling and trying to bring that stuff around is it's not always realistic. And so, you got to make it work sometimes with whatever's there.
Yeah. It's really interesting to hear you tell that story, because I was at that show. I have video of that show. And No one there, I guess, with the exception of the folks who, you know, who were on stage or backstage, would have known that there was an issue with any, you know, with regarding your sound whatsoever, because it was intense, it was really good. It was, as a matter of fact, one of the my favorite times I've seen you.
Oh man, that's cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, the set was too short, but that's okay. I mean, you know, but that's the Dallas show, you know. That's how.
Well, it was an honor to be there. You know, it was an honor, and that was one of the. I think that might have been the first time I met Eric Johnson, but he was a real gentleman and
yes.
Real nice guy. We had a bit of time to talk, and he just couldn't have been any kinder. I didn't chat with Eric Gales. He was there the next day or the day after that.
Yeah,
but we had met. I think we met a little bit later that year, and again, really nice guy as mm-hmm. well, which is always nice. You know, sometimes you don't want to meet some of your favorite cats because you don't know how they're going to be. You know?
Oh, yeah. That has blown up in my face. Absolutely, yeah.
it can take a minute to get over sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, but the music is so beautiful.
Yeah.
This guy's such an ass.
It happens.
Yeah.
But so does your rig change that often? Your personal rig, does it change that often, or you pretty much, I mean, I know as far as the guitars, they are what they are, and thank goodness they are what they are, but as far as amps and pedals,
you know, that's it changes all the time. I had the real privilege of getting to know and work with, not necessarily I was doing any work, but I was there while he was doing the work, with Cesar Diaz.
And oh, yeah.
when I was just getting started and I was touring with, I was working with Jeff Healey, and you know, Jeff being with, to me, as far as I'm concerned, one of the greatest to ever play, top shelf. I mean, he's very, very special. And mm-hmm. one thing I learned immediately was getting on a stage with Jeff, and I had a couple boutique amps or something at the time, you know, that were supposed to be the one to get or whatever. And I got on that stage. Jeff had a 100-watt Marshall and a 412, and completely swallowed those sweet sounding amps up. Like they were just, they sound beautiful. You're in a room. Oh, they're $3,500. Let's get it. Okay, great. You get on stage and you can't hear it.
Yeah.
It's just disappeared. It was like, what is going on here? And so, you know, at that point I realized that, okay, this is a major league cat. This is how he's doing it. Like mm-hmm. it's loud, mm-hmm. but it's powerful. And so I started experimenting a bit and trying different amplifiers, all kinds of things. And you know, certainly the tone is from the soul. I fully believe that. And you know, it's great to have vehicles that can help to inspire you. So whatever the amplifier is. So, at a certain point on the road, I called I called Cesar Diaz, and I just said, hey, I'm working with Jeff, and you know, obviously I know all about, you know, your legendary status, you know, would you be willing to work on an amp? And he was like, send it over. Like, he couldn't have been any cooler, mm-hmm. any more friendly. He had built me a Fuzz, a square face, like way early on, and then a couple of years later I went down to see him, and I stayed at his house, and he put me up, and his family was there, like his son and his wife, and I brought a bunch of amps, and he taught me so much in a very short amount of time there, and got these amps going. And then I remember being on stage with Jeff one night with this dual Showman that Cesar had done, and he said, dude, what amp was that? And so I knew that, like, okay, cool, like we're getting somewhere here. So Cesar really helped, you know, he really helped to kind of get the ball rolling in terms of learning about tone. And so to this day, I'm continually changing tubes, you know, batteries, order of pedals. It's mm-hmm. always changing.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you've done. What vibe are you using right now?
So I've gone through. You know, they're all good, right? There's a lot of vibes out there, and they all sound amazing. I've been using one of the ones that Bob Sweet made in the '90s, like the early ones that he made, the Ultra Vibe. So it's sort of like in a black box, and I don't know what it is. It doesn't necessarily have the most intense throb or the least intense. It's just something about it, the way that it interacts with the other pedals or with even when it's not on, just the sound and the feel, to me, feels fantastic. So that's the one that I find myself going back to.
Cool. Yeah, it's funny. Scott K over at BMF is working on a new vibe right now, and he's getting.
Oh, I love Scott.
He's a great dude. I'm getting ready to hear it soon. I can't wait to check it out.
I bet it'll be great because you know what? They're talk about a nice guy. You know, I mean, he is a really, really nice guy, and his pedals are like you could throw them off the top of a building and they'd still work.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
They're so solid and they sound wicked. I mean, he's a solid dude. I like him.
Yeah, his fuzzes are great. That Sissy fuzz is amazing. I love that thing.
It's crazy sounding. That's my favorite pedal. It's amazing.
I love it. You know, there's one thing that people don't talk about with you nearly enough, and I'm kind of surprised that they don't, is your vocals. You know, they talk about, I mean, obviously, you know, you're this blazing, amazing, really tasteful guitar player, but your vocals are so good. And on the new record, you really kind of stretched on this one more than you have in the past. Do you feel the same as far as that? Do you think that you really pushed it as far as the vocals?
Thanks a lot. You know, that really means a lot to me. I mean, I'm always working on it. Yeah, absolutely. I think there was just more of an opportunity, just with the songs that I was writing, there was just more of an opportunity to go in that direction. You know, it was certainly it was made in collaboration with Warner Music. And so, you know, Warner, you know, working with a major, you know, they want to hear different things, let's just say. And so I think not that by any means was like altering who I am or what I am, but I think being aware of the people that don't necessarily want to hear blues music, it made that very clear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that having to sort of straddle that in a way where I'm like, well, I know who I am and I'm not really interested in pretending to be something, you know, no matter, I don't, you know, and sometimes that resonates with business partners and other times it doesn't, you know, a lot of times they're looking for really malleable artists.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really know who they are and aren't really sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times when you bring that to the table as somebody, well, you know, this is not my first barbecue and it's not my last. And I'm a student of music and this is where I'm at right now. You know, there's a lot of times behind the curtain, it's not about the artist. It's about the people that work at the label.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's about bean counters, you know, I mean, I know I've seen that. I mean, you know, when I was deep into the music business as an artist, you know, working with some of the companies in New York that will remain nameless, you know, it was really I saw bands, you know, being broken apart and hot rotted like they were a car, you know. The bass player and the drummer don't work for this group, so we're going to get rid of those two. We're going to keep the other two guys, and we like these group of songs, and then we're going to bring in some songwriters. And like, oh man,
yeah.
It's like, well, that whole identity of when that A&R rep went into the club, that smoky, disgusting, dirty club, you know, and saw this band and said, yes, I want to sign this group. That group is gone.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And you don't always know that, right? Because once you look behind the curtain, as you know, it's kind of like, holy shit, that's what's really going on here. Like what, you know? And a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of dangling of a golden carrot. So you're kind of like, well,
right.
You know, and we don't need to go down the rabbit hole. It's as I was saying, it's a privilege to make music, and
right.
I think a lot of times there are a lot of distractions, a lot of elements that try to push you away from who you really, really are.
Right.
And in the making of this music, in the making of Spirit Rising, I really had to stand my ground. There was a lot of there were a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and I'm really proud of myself. And I say this as somebody who's constantly trying to learn and get better, that I stood my ground. That
mm-hmm.
I didn't let an A&R person come in and rewrite my song.
Right.
That I didn't, you know, I didn't sign up for that, you
mm-hmm.
know? And I think, so for me, the record was a direct I mean, there were certainly some feedback and correspondence that was really helpful as well. And I think that's just it. You take the good and you can leave the rest behind. Mm-hmm. A very big learning experience for me. But my dad passed away during the making of the record. And we were really, really tight. And he was a major influence on me around the music and being a musician in this world and the kind of music that I was raised on and what I've devoted my life to. And so I think it really turned a corner for me where I know who I am from the time, like, you know, and where I'm going with this and what I want to do in the world with this and how I want to be a better person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of these things I want to learn. And so I think the record was me doing the very best that I could at the time with a completely broken heart to share the music that was really where I was at, you know, at that time, and certainly co-writing with some incredible writers, guys like Marty Fredrickson, Richard Marx wrote on a song. Yeah. You know, like these are super talented cats. I mean, it's not a mistake why they've been so successful. And so, so it was really a life-altering experience to make this record, and I think it allowed me to really stand up for myself in a way that, you know, it was hard for me prior with other managers, business partners, record labels. So it's a really, and not to go, you know, on and on about it, but I just really think it was a major growing and learning experience for me. So I think to hear that, you know, to hear that resonates in that way and to hear some new things in it, Mark, you know, that really means a lot to me on a lot of levels. So thank you.
That's super cool. And my condolences about your dad. I mean, I know what a dad is. My dad is my hero. Absolutely.
Man.
You know, the thing I dig most about the latest record, though, is although it's got a lot of roots of traditional electric blues, rock, bass guitar, you know, and music, it has a modern approach to the song structure and the recorded tones. I mean, even though there's some times where, like, there's one track in there that you really harken back to, like, that Norman Greenbaum fuzz tone, you know, the Jordan Boss tone vibe. I love that sound, which oddly enough has become modern again, which is bizarre to me.
It's all cyclical.
Yeah. What I dig about the records is that it goes someplace. It goes forward. It takes the genre forward. Yeah, you know, I put it up there with Gary Clark Jr.'s last record. You know.
Oh, cool.
Taking the genre forward because, you know, man, when I hear Jimmy Vaughn, I want to hear Jimmy Vaughn. I don't want to hear, you know. I mean, not that Jimmy can't do something modern, but Jimmy does what Jimmy does. Jimmy's, you know, but I think the blues needs to go, the blues and blues rock needs to go somewhere. And I feel like this record is taking those steps to let it evolve. It's got to evolve. And this record is that evolution to me.
That's awesome, man. That's heavy, and that's the intention. That was 100% the intention of the record. So to receive that feedback is deeply meaningful. Thank you.
Super cool. I would love to. There's some songs on the record. I'd love to jump around the record and talk about some tunes, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely. Thanks. Yeah, man. Thanks. Thank you.
So the track "Wild," which was part of the reason I asked you about your vibe. The grind of this steamy sex drive, it can't be denied. It's like it's a baby making groove right there, man. You know, and I love the unexpected chord and time signature changes in there. Tell me, walk me through that track.
Yeah, well, you know, the song really was something that I wrote with Gavin Brown, who is a Canadian producer and songwriter, along with Maya Davies. And they were doing a lot of collaboration with Warner. And so they felt like, hey, yeah, this would be a good, let's do a little bit of work with these guys or these fine artists. And so it was fun. So we kind of wrote the song, and I ended up having it for a little bit and You know, I don't think it was, you know, to just to circle back, I don't know if it was like initially what Warner was, you know, excited to hear. And I was like, well, this is kind of where I'm at. It's about, you know, the concept of the song, sort of like Breaking Free, is really a song about mental illness. And it's a song mm-hmm. about the things that we can hold ourselves back unintentionally sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we're aware of it and there's not a clear way forward to how to sort of figure out this riddle or these, you know, whatever it is, this block in one's life. And again, I'm not trying to speak for anyone else, but more so for myself. And I think the song is really just sort of like screaming at points to sort of rip through something that had really been in my way for a long time. Mm-hmm. Some things that I've been working on personally around mental illness and you know, things that a lot of people have either taken advantage of on my journey, or some others have been an ally. And, you know, so I think for me, it's really about that sort of expression and really sort of screaming it out in some ways. Not necessarily in the same way, like, say, you know, John Lennon's first record, the Plastic Ono mm-hmm. Record, where he's doing a lot of the scream therapy, but perhaps influenced from that in some way. So mm-hmm. the song is really about like just embracing, like, yeah, like sometimes you just want to be wild. Like, you don't want it to be predictable. You don't want to be something where someone puts you in a box and says, yes, this is very slick and this is what you must be. And it's like I'm like a wildflower. Like, you know, it's not predictable. And that's how, so that's really what the song is about, trying to get there and emotionally. And I think as well with, you know, listening to being a big fan of Buddy Guy's Sweet Tea record.
Yeah.
We sort of brought, you know, I think just that was in my mind, in my heart, while also working on the song.
Right. It's got that cathartic vibe.
Awesome. Well, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. Thanks. So the beautiful arrangement of Give Me Time. I love that. It just is like, I feel like I'm listening to a Stax record.
Cool.
You know, and it's got tons of range. Once again, there's a killer vocal on there.
Thanks, man.
And just beautiful playing, rolling off the volume knob a little bit on there and just cleaning it up enough where you hear every single nuance of what's going on there. And it's just beautiful. What was it? What do you remember what guitar you used for that? Was that Mother?
Well, thank you so much. You know, that's really sweet. And, you know, first of all, I mean, it's Magic Sam, right? The song.
Right.
Like Magic Sam being like, you know, one of the baddest to ever walk the earth.
Absolutely.
And I just, the first time I heard that song was him playing it, I think on an acoustic in his living room. There's like a recording of it. And I don't know, I just thought the song was so sweet. And so I started working it up with a friend of mine, Michael Nielsen, who I've worked with over the years. And he's just a super talent musician, incredible producer, composer, and amazing human being. We've recorded a lot together over the years. And so he produced the song. And yeah, when I got there, he had like an amazing Gretsch that we used. I can't remember the model number. It was a hollow body. It was green.
Wow.
And it was gorgeous. And then we ended up using, he had a little Princeton in the studio that we ended up using, I think, for the most of the track. And then I used my Strat for some of the lead stuff.
Mm-hmm. Super cool. And again, back to Magic Sam. I mean, who used vibrato units better than him?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think really who did a lot of things, who did anything better than him? I don't know. Because when you go back and hear some of those live recordings, it's like,
Oh my God, yes. What's
happening here?
on YouTube, there's a show in a club in 1968, I believe it is. And I think it's in Germany or France. I can't remember which. And it is the most incredible hour of music I think I've ever heard. It is absolutely insane.
Yeah, right. Like what, and also as a vocalist too, just so
yes.
beautiful. And he left this world very young. I think he's 32.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
Special man.
Yeah. So another one that's an excellent representation of the modern vibe that I was talking about, but holding on to the roots. And like I said, that fuzz, oh my God, is She's the Music.
cool.
Oh my God. That fuzz is so great. It's every time I hear that track, it just puts a big smile on my face, man. That fuzz is just so beautiful.
That's cool, man. Thank you. That's awesome. Yeah, we wanted to have a little fun with that.
Yeah, what are you using on there? What kind of fuzz are you using on there?
So let me think about it. I mean, it was most likely a fuzz face or an Octavia that would have been, you know, just used like a fuzz, you know.
Right.
I know at the intro we used some stuff on the bass. What did we use there? We used some kind of funky fuzz pedal that my friend Mark Rains had. And Mark is just an awesome producer, engineer, studio genius here in Los Angeles. He has a studio called Station House, and he came up with Dave Cobb, who's out of Nashville, and that's how Mark and I met. But he's down for the fuzz. He knows, you know, he's got some like unmarked boxes. He's like, well, let's just try this. And I was like, okay, that'll do. So, you know, I don't even know what it was. if that's what we ended up using on there, some kind of silver box with some old silver box. Yes. I don't know.
And once again, another excellent example of you pushing the genre forward is a track on the record called Oh My.
Oh, yeah, right on.
The chorus is so unexpected, but so welcome. And the piano is perfectly placed. It is such a great arrangement.
Oh, that's really cool. Thank you. You know, it's a love song, certainly for my wife, and it's a song that I wrote with a friend of mine named Brad Hooks, who's just a super talented artist here, and you know, I think we just tried to bring a little bit of a melodic, you know, somewhat of a hooky chorus without making it too much like a Frankenstein thing where you've got sort of a bluesy situation and you've got a completely wrong chorus for it. But mm-hmm. I think we were able to get it in there and it felt, you know, it felt really natural and loving. So yeah. So yeah. Thank you.
That's cool. I love it. And then the track Once, which is like $1 million chorus right there. And again, great vocals. Another great track.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And then you hear songs like Warning Shot and Burning Out, and those are like being at a live show right there.
Well, that was the intention, for sure. Right?
Yeah.
Like Burning Out was done, I mean, the bed track anyway, like the, you know, is live. So, and it was just Mike Glazier and I. So Mike is an amazing drummer. We've known each other for years, and he's a dear friend and an influence. You know, I think he's just a tremendous musician. He plays with Walter Trout right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's his main gig. But he, you know, he's played with a lot of different people, and we just really have fun playing together. So we just got in the room and started recording, and that was one of them.
Well, that's cool. Have you heard Walter's last record?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, it's really good.
Once again, he totally breaking character and pushing the genre forward, in my opinion. He was really...
I'm with you.
Yeah, he definitely was doing something. And it's been so exciting for me, as somebody who listens to so much music, because I have records coming my way all the time to review and talk about whether or not the guests, you know. And I'm telling you, your record, the Gary Clark Jr. record, the Walter Trout record, the new Joanna Connor record that was produced by Bonamassa and Josh Smith. And I know you, Josh, there's another amazing guitar player. Holy cow.
He can play.
Holy crap. So, you know, these records are so great. And finally, I love the fact that everybody is really saying, okay, yes, we love doing a 1-4-5 and A, and we're going to wail and we're going to do, but we're also going to do this and continue to capture the ear and make, you know, make my eyebrows go up.
right.
You know,
yeah.
It's beautiful. It is really, really beautiful. I love the intention behind it all.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah. So, you know, I know you're in California, and I know things are still a little wonky there as far as, you know, what's going on in the world and all. So do you think that there'll be some sort of live gigs in your near or distant future?
I'm hopeful that, you know, at some point this year, there'll be an opportunity to, you know, to get out and play. And, you know, the Dallas Festival was so kind to invite me to come and perform this year. And I think just with where, you know, where things are at, I think things are getting sorted out still. It just sort of, you know, I think it felt like, probably best to wait until next year. So I think that's what, you know, for me, even though I think they're going to have a festival and I'm sure it'll be great. I think just with things being so uncertain, I think looking at what's happening in Germany right now, parts of Europe. And I think realistically keeping an eye on the numbers that are increasing in the US again, up by almost 10%. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's game over yet.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. And, you know, that's why I'm so proud of like the owners of Seaboys and the Continental, which is the same owner, and Saxon Pub here in Austin. They've all even though the mask mandate was lifted, they were like, we don't agree. We're going to stay closed. We're going to continue to pay our staff, and you know, music will return. And I mean, you have no idea. I mean, I'm sure you do, actually. I mean, every Tuesday night, if he's not on the road, I'm there to see David Grissom at my favorite table at the Saxon Pub for a guitar lesson, you know. And then on a Friday night, if he's not on the road, it's Jimmy Vaughn at Seaboys, you know, and so on and so forth. And to not have that steady diet is really, really tough. You know?
It's a void. It's a huge void.
Yeah.
In I can't even. I don't want to speak for you, but I can imagine it's a huge void in your vitamins, your weekly vitamins that you're taking for your well being, for your overall health.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a big piece of life that's missing.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I always wanted to ask, and I love to ask this question of people who were once, you know, for lack of a better term, the side man or the side person working for another artist or working with another artist. When you worked with Jeff Healey, who was just a monument of amazing sound, and I'll never forget the first time I heard him. Him do the John Hiatt song Confident Man.
Yeah.
And first off, his vocals were just beautiful, just top.
Yeah, notch. It's such a beautiful voice.
Such a great voice. And then I heard that guitar solo in that song, and I'm a big John Hiatt fan. But working with Jeff, and then working with Melissa, how do you find your place in those, you know, how do you find the dynamic for yourself and for what they need? Is it something that you ask them, or is it something they tell you, or is it something you just have to figure out along the way?
I love that question, Mark, and you know, thank you for asking, because like for instance with Jeff or Melissa, like the imprint is so big, right? Like the sound, the presence, the song, the whole, like all of it is big. So how do I fit myself in that situation to complement the message of their song and performance and know my place? And, you know, and so I always approached it as, for me, even though I respect them both so much, they're mentors. And so, you know, I always approached it from the place of I'm a guest in Jeff's house. This is Jeff's house tonight. There's 1,500 people here, whatever, 2,000 people, but it's Jeff's house, and I'm a guest on his stage. Even though, you know, I'm part of the band, whatever, yes, and I always have an eye on him. Or Melissa, I always have one eye on the lead person. Just, it's almost like, so they can make that no look pass, right? So it's like if I was on a hockey team, right? I'm like, I'm playing with, you know, one of the, you know, let's say like I'm playing with Sidney Crosby. I don't know if you're a hockey person or not, but it's like Jeff Healey is like this Sidney Crosby. You can do fucking anything at any time. So you got to be on your toes and watching. And kick ass when he throws it to you. Mm-hmm. Like when he throws a pass to you, mm-hmm. you better make that thing wicked hot. So I think just being like, you know, I think just being respectful that, you know, it's their house, that people paid money to come see them. They didn't come see me. They came to see Melissa sing tonight. They came to see her rock out. Mm-hmm. And if she asks me, nods at me to go and take a solo for the next 5-10 minutes or whatever, I'm going to go and make that the absolute 100% best that I can, to try to make the night as great as it can be for everyone. And yeah. I think ultimately never losing sight that it's their stage, their house, and it's a privilege to be in it. So these are world-class artists. Let's do my absolute very best to honor that tonight. Yeah. And neither of them really told me too much, right? It was kind of, you kind of get it, or like they weren't into micromanaging. Neither of them. I mean, they were just kind of like, I want you to be you. Right. You know, I mean, there'll be cues, there'll be this and that, but no, I want you to be you. And if I throw you a solo or throw you a jam here for a while, I want you to go and like raise the roof. And then, you know, like, so they were very supportive in that way. And I think also they knew that I was focused on doing my own thing. So they were both very much like, well, yeah, let's kind of groom you here and get you going. You know, like Melissa would go out of her way to talk to A&R people and be like, yeah, you know, you should probably, you might want to check out this guy, you know, and she would say that from the stage, and Jeff would do the same thing. And so I'm thankful. So I don't know if that answers the question, but
no, absolutely. Yeah.
Just like approaching it as a sponge, as a student, trying to learn as much as I can, and like show up 100% because of how much I admire them.
Absolutely. They both, and you would know better than anybody, and correct me if I'm wrong, they both seem like such incredible nurturers.
You know, they really are the most incredible nurturers. And yeah, and it was, I mean, just absolutely, they're the real deal, you know, there's no pretending. Yeah. And I think, you know, just their ability to, there's something so special about the courage that I see in both of them as leaders, as artists. There's something so courageous. Mm-hmm. And not just, you know, the different kind of mountains that they've had to climb in their lives, but just there's like a purity in the message and the musical connection that I admire so much and that I'm striving for every day. So, yeah.
And that pureness to not be selfish and say, oh, I want to keep him in the band, but to kick you out of the nest and say, all right, you know what? It's time for you to go and do your thing now. I think that's super cool.
Yeah, I mean, they were both like that. And, you know, I'll never forget. I mean, that's the first thing Jeff said to me when he invited me in. It was just like, you know, hey, we're going to teach you how to play. You know, we're going to tour the world and we'll teach you how to play on bigger stages, big stages, and we'll groom you and we'll get you ready to go on your way. How's that sound? I mean,
that just doesn't happen.
I mean, guys, but he meant it. And he did that with other artists too, in different genres, jazz musicians. And, you know, he cared.
That's,
you know,
amazing.
Yeah. Great guy.
Yeah. Well, sir, I honestly believe that you are, you know, I'm not a religious guy. I'm a spiritual person, but I'm not a religious guy. But I truly believe that you are blessed with talent and with intention. And I truly believe there are much bigger things ahead for you.
Oh, man. That's, Mark, getting me a little teary over here, man. Thank you. That really, no, sincerely, man, that really means a lot. And, you know, this conversation is extremely meaningful, and I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to the music and ask such thoughtful questions. And this means a lot to me. So thank you for taking the time today.
And thank you. Folks, the record is called Spirit Rising. Don't just stream it, buy it. All right? This is a record you want. You want this in your collection. Folks, go to philipsace.com. Great website, by the way. Lots of really great stuff going on over there. Lots of stuff to look at and read up on. And
thank you.
And, man, I can't thank you enough for being on the show.
Man, thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
All right. Well, we're going to sign off right here, but you hold on one sec.
Okay.
All right.
Radio Show on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, GuitarRadioShow.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Find Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, if you like the artists you hear on Guitar Radio Show, don't just stream their music, buy it.
GRS Productions.